Thank you for joining us for the introductory session of Meeting Dr. Harker. So as a follow-on, in this particular episode with Dr. Harker, we're going to focus on strategies to foster organizational norms, policies, and leadership that prioritizes mental health and substance use prevention. Thanks again to Dr. Harker for joining us. Dr. Harker, what does a culture of prevention look like in practice?
Dr. Goodman, I think what we need to do when we seek to answer that question around the culture is what has historically happened within workplaces. And I think what I want to emphasize is that there's been a paradigm shift in how companies now address substance use and mental health in the workplace, as opposed to how they've done that, let's say 25, 30 years ago. And there has really been a concerted effort to move towards a public health approach as it pertains to workers' health. I'm suggesting that any kind of prevention or health promotion that operates within an organizational setting needs to include not just the workplace and those that are employed within the workplace, but also workers, families, and the communities within which they live, simply because we know and understand now that the workplace mirrors what happens within a community. And people that work within an organization live in a community. So the narrow shift of just looking at employers within your sphere of influence has sort of changed over the last couple of years. Very often in the past, there was just a focus on work-related health issues. So whether you can fly the aeroplane and you are visually able to do that, to now include other health determinants beyond that. And that has evolved over the last couple of years. Traditionally, there was also just a focus, and perhaps the work setting was like that at the time. You have people that are employed permanently within your organization, but the global world has evolved. So you have informal workers, you have contract workers that come in and out of the organization, and that the idea of prevention not just extend to those that you pay on a monthly basis, but also those that you contract in to do some work from time to time. And the other was that I've also seen change over time is, for instance, things around employees' responsibility, that in fact, that health responsibility does not just rely or lie within employers, but also with stakeholders. And by stakeholders, I would mean that it's also now become the business of occupational health practitioners, the issue around substance use and mental health, but also trade unions, which are also often left behind out of the conversation. And that right now versus 25 years ago, health promotion, prevention has become to a certain degree a non-negotiable. It is almost enshrined in a duty to care approach, which the WHO and the International Labour Organization subscribe to. The principle moving from a traditional labour approach to a public health approach sort of rests on that duty to care principle.
That's great, Nadine. So what you're really suggesting is that one has to be mindful of where we're coming from and understand the limitations that that's placed on our concept of what workplace wellness looks like in general, and particularly as it applies to substance use disorder. Specifically, you know, I enjoyed that you framed the extension of the workplace as an extension of society, of community, of where we're coming from. Keeping that in mind, how, in your view, can managers and human resource leaders model healthy behaviors and nurture a supportive, healthy workplace?
With all organizations, and you're right. It starts with the top down. And one of the challenges has always been that mental health and substance use is very stigmatized. It is not as palatable to managers and organizational leaders as, for instance, diabetes or cancer is. One of the things that we have often said is that organizations need to develop a strategic prevention framework around substance use and mental health in their organization. But to do that, you first of all would presumably need a very bushy bushy-tailed leader at the top who already has an understanding around substance use and mental health issues and has already perhaps dealt with misconceptions around these things so that it filters down. Almost a leadership ripple effect is needed. We often say that with organizations, you need to generally do your needs assessment and build capacity. And build capacity is exactly where the leadership comes in. Because when you introduce substance use and mental health prevention programs, uppermost should always be universal application of these and workplace consultation. It cannot be done at the top in an office and just filtered down, because this is an issue that affects people and employees need to have a hand in those. So the universal application of it is almost paramount. Again, the focus has always been on the employee that uses, but never the executive that goes on business trips and drinks alcohol and is intoxicated the next day. It's almost more acceptable or considered acceptable in that way, as opposed to the ordinary laborer that comes in the morning and may be intoxicated. The application of certain things is not the same. So one of the ways is obviously around universal application, workplace consultation, and training. Training is underscored a lot of the time. And when this is from my experience working in that sector, when training comes or happens, it generally hits the lower level worker, that is the supervisor level, and doesn't always extend to the manager or the executive management level. And in order to affect change, you would need all of those levels to be on the same path. And to embrace the idea or the notion or the concept or the plan of becoming intentional about integrating prevention into the program. Things like visible leadership is underscored and highlighted always, because if a leader consistently, and leadership, I'm speaking the higher echelons of every organization, constantly communicate the importance of mental health and substance use disorders, they're becoming wellness champions. That already is a quarter of the way into having a successful program running within your organization.
Thanks, Nadine. You know, your reflection about universal application and ensuring that capacity building and upskilling is across the levels of leadership, so going all the way from the employee to the most senior manager, really, I think, has actually answered my next question, which was going to be about how do we deal with stigma? And when you talk about these interventions, you're also talking about really impactfully increasing accessibility. But really importantly is the component of having a leader who has good knowledge of substance use and mental health considerations and the public health focus that the workplace should be oriented around. What are the implications for specific training? So does it mean everyone in the organization should have the same training? Does it mean there needs to be differentiated training? What in your experience would be the advice there?
So every organization, and I must say the large corporates, would normally have a workplace or substance use policy in place. The smaller to medium enterprises, they perhaps struggle, and there's obviously a gap there, but the policies are a critical component of how this would manifest in the organization. Policies, I often, when I used to do this training, and even now when I lecture on it, on substance use in the workplace, I can't overemphasize the importance of having a policy for two specific reasons. So the policy, naturally, as policies would do, would address risk factors in the organization. So it would look at what are the issues, is there exposure, is there substance use, etc., and map out a way to deal with that. But in another sense, if you look at the flip side of it, the policy will also have a protective factor element in it, in that if a policy indicates that all managers should at least have a 1 hour session on mental health and substance use and how to address it within their certain levels, that already starts acting as a protective factor for employees. employees, because managers would understand that that there are so many factors that would drive things like tardiness, poor productivity, accidents, etc. Risk policy would also look at, would also incorporate and address things like social influences. So for instance, a policy could be strongly rooted in encouraging things like teamwork, because we know teamwork, group cohesion is a protective factor against substance use. So if a prevention framework is a centered and a policy centered around promoting these, yes, the policy, if the policy will say if you use substances at work, there will be sanctions, but equally the policy will say if you happen to be in that boat, this is how we can assist you. And that is a narrative that the leaders in the organization would need to do and obviously be exposed to the training they're in. It allows you to look at the workplace environment as well within the policy and how to address the risk factors and the protective factors. And that is in essence, I think everything would ride on first leadership, visible leadership, getting the messaging, having your proper policy in place that takes into consideration all of these finer nuances, including making accommodation for training at each tier of the organization. What the executive gets trained on is not necessarily what the supervisor would get trained on. The supervisor would get trained on specifics, for instance, how to pick up if something is amiss with an employee, whereas an executive has the powers to make decisions as to whether there is a bar at the workplace that staff can access after work hours to have a quick drink. Executives, including other tiers, can have an influence on the culture of the organization. So if there are functions that are big functions, we will not be selling or providing more than one glass of alcohol, for instance, or they may have a zero tolerance policy or what the case may be. But you can only get to that point in the policy once there's a mutual understanding of the harms and the potential negative impacts on employees. I'm not sure if that was clear.
It was, Nadine. Thank you so much. So in this first session, you've really given us an idea of the importance of considering the workplace as an extension of the home space, of society. You've given us a sense of the importance of differentiating training levels based on, aligned with the roles of each executive within an organization. And you've really spoken to us about universal application. Towards the end, you also mentioned some of the features that some managers might pick up that might allude to the fact that there might be some challenges with substance use. And that's actually going to be the topic for our next session. So Nadine, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. For our next episode, where we are actually going to be delving much further into the considerations for early identification and support. Thanks, Nadine.
Thank you.
Thank you for spending this time with us. We hope you enjoy that as much as we did. Be sure to hop on over to our website, isop.net, where you'll find information on how to sign up for free membership. Take care and catch you on the next one.